is Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN. It's our daily in-depth look at people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. Inside Douglas County is presented by Concrete Builders Supply. Now, Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Today, a candidate interview, U.S. Senator Jeff Merkley joining us from Washington, D.C. Senator, good afternoon. Thanks for being on.
Good afternoon. It's good to be with you.
So for newer residents in the area, talk about your background, your career, and your time in the Oregon State Legislature to start us off.
Sure, you bet. I think let people know I come from Myrtle Creek, so down the road from Roseburg, lived in Roseburg through first grade, so always feel a strong connection to Douglas County. And I am really kind of immersed in the question of how do we build a stronger America that will work for ordinary people. I feel like, you know, the powerful, they have all kinds of ways of manipulating things to their benefit, driving greater income inequality and wealth inequality. But there's nothing that is so fundamental to success of a family as healthcare, education, housing, and a good paying job.
So what about your background to begin, though? What kinds of things did you do in life before getting into the legislature?
Yeah, so originally I worked on an area that I thought was the biggest threat to the world at the time I was getting out of school, which was strategic nuclear policy, the fact that we had all these nuclear weapons aimed at then the Soviet Union, now Russia. They had all of them aimed at us. They were all in a hair trigger. We had some very close calls where we almost called and Soviet Union almost called a nuclear strike. And so I worked on that issue through the 1980s, working for Secretary of Defense Caspar Weinberger under Ronald Reagan and working for Congress. And then I spent a couple of years as a carpenter rebuilding a house. Kind of keep in touch with my, growing up, my dad was a mechanic and a millwright. That's a mechanic that keeps a lumber mill running. And so I got a chance to kind of reconnect with plumbing and wiring and roofing and carpentry and eventually made my way back to Oregon. It's in Oregon where I started working for nonprofits, Habitat for Humanity, stressing home ownership for families who have been homeless. And then being able to develop affordable housing and eventually found my way into the Oregon legislature.
So how long did you serve in Salem?
So I was there 10 years. It was 22 years ago that I ran for the Oregon House. I was running against two former state representatives in the primary, and people kept saying, well, you really don't have a chance because these people, they have contacts, they have fundraising operations, they know how this is done. And I just decided, well, you know, if I'm going to knock on more doors and talk to more people than my opponents, which is what I did, and you know what? You end up getting elected that way.
And you spent that time in Salem. What do you think was one of your biggest accomplishments being in the Oregon State Legislature?
Well, in Salem, I felt that the deck was really stacked against healthcare, housing, education, and jobs. And so in 2003, I quit my paid job, which was working for a nonprofit, and started organizing to try to get a majority that would support greater investments for families, and succeeded in that and became Speaker of the House in 2007. And I know we had a pretty good year that year for those fundamentals.
So what led to you deciding to end the work in Salem and try to be working in Washington, D.C.?
Well, it's something I could never have imagined. You know, when you come from a small town, you assume that the idea of somebody running statewide, they must have massive connections through their family or inherited wealth or something of that nature. I don't check any of those boxes. And so I never had even thought about the idea of running for an office representing Oregon back in D.C. But what happened was that when I was Speaker, there were two folks getting ready to run for this Senate seat. And those two folks were our two congressmen who are still two of our congressmen, Earl Blumenauer in Portland and Peter DeFazio in CD4, including Douglas County. And but then both of them decided at the last minute not to run. basically because nobody thought the race was a feasible race. And I feel like our Democratic Republic needs to have alternative visions presented to people about what we're fighting for. You don't thrive if there's only one side of that argument presented. And so I thought, well, I had some pretty strong feelings about making this world work better for ordinary families like my family. And so I said, you know what, I'm going to jump into this race. I did not expect to win. I carried a list in my pocket of the things I was going to do. My kids were small. I thought, you know, after I lose, I'll be able to spend a lot more time on the types of things like Boy Scouts and so forth, ball games with my kids. But, you know, when you get in, every now and then, when you get onto the battlefield, even if the odds are not high, you end up winning.
And what year was it that you went to Washington, D.C.?
That was in 2009.
What do you feel like you've accomplished in the last time in the U.S. Senate?
Well, one of the big factors is fighting for people all across our state with the different projects that make sense. For example, mass timber, really important to our timber industry. So I've been able to get funds to Oregon State to build a mass timber center and operations to test and develop the building codes. If we can build tall buildings, by tall buildings, I mean currently we only build with wood to about 3 to 4 stories. If we can build 5 to 14 stories, there's a whole huge market that's opened up for our Oregon timber and for producing those products from our mills rather than sending our logs overseas. So I feel really good about the fact that mass timber market has opened up. One of the very first mill was in Riddle, where my father worked as a millwright, and D.R. Johnson proceeded to hand build that first mass timber press. That's an example, but I've done that all over the state, fighting to rectify a situation with our fishermen where they were charged way too much for loans they'd received from the federal government, fighting to save the rescue helicopter that's in Newport, fighting to get federal funds to take on sudden oak death in the southwest corner of the state, fighting to get help to do irrigation piping for our irrigators in Central Oregon, working to get the Klamath Basin Restoration Act vision completed in the Klamath Basin, and so forth. That's kind of something that comes out of my effort to do a town hall in every county every year, and beforehand I meet with the local leaders, is I hear what they're working on that needs help, and then I have my team go to work on it. And the result has been a whole string of victories.
What do you feel like are some of your key issues maybe in this year or in the last couple of years that you've focused on?
Well, right now, I'm trying to drive a huge change in the Senate so it will work better for ordinary working people in this country. The priorities for the wealthy, including court packing so that corporations are favored over working people, and tax cuts for the richest Americans, those only require a simple majority in the Senate. But bills to make families have a stronger foundation to thrive, healthcare, housing, education, infrastructure, so forth, those require a vote not of 51, but of 60. So the Senate's been rigged against the people. So I'm leading an effort to unrig it. And we need to unrig our elections. After we fix the Senate, we got to fix our elections, take on the gerrymandering, the voter suppression intimidation, the dark money that's in our campaigns. If we do those things, then we'll have a foundation to really do so much more on back to those fundamentals that I'm talking about, those kind of four corners of the foundation for families of healthcare, housing, education, and jobs.
Do you feel like dark money and some of those issues you just talked about, though, is something that's not just restricted to one side of the aisle?
Well, what you have is rules that allow PACs to not publicize their donors. That's why it's dark. And in that sense, those rules are the rules for both sides of the aisle. And both sides of the aisle have different PACs that take advantage of those rules. But when it comes to whether those rules should be in place, then you have a huge partisan division. Every member of the Democrats voted for the Disclose Act to end the secrecy behind campaign money. And every Republican voted to keep their secrecy. Same thing goes with the For the People Act, which would take on this in the future. It's a bill that I led with Tom Udall this past 2 years, and Tom's retiring. I'll continue to lead this effort. And again, every Democrat supported, every Republican opposed. So the rules are used by both sides. It is the current rule, but you know what? Half of us think the rules should change, and there should be no secret money pouring into campaigns.
Yes,
and half of us don't. I'm hoping that we'll have a majority that thinks that needs to be changed here next year.
You announced yesterday the Zero Emission Vehicles Act, which would, well, why don't you explain what the ramifications of that legislation would be?
Basically, this is designed to help drive the transition from fossil fuels to renewable energy. One of the major uses of fossil fuels is in our cars. So essentially trying to develop the market over the next 15 years so that we can make that transition. Hopefully the electric cars will have similar range recharging speeds that will equate to the time it takes to fill a gas tank, will in theory be cheaper than gasoline powered cars because they're so much simpler. And the cost of fuel is a hell of a lot less. Electrons are a lot cheaper than are the gasoline right now. But to get to a place, you have to lay out a vision and kind of put the gears in motion to get there. So that's what this this bill is about. We see the impacts of carbon pollution from burning fossil fuels on rural Oregon everywhere. We have a lower average snowpack in the Cascades, which is affecting our irrigation water. It's affecting the health of our trout streams, our salmon streams. It is having a big impact on the length and ferocity of our fire season. It's affecting our commercial fishing off the coast in a couple different ways. Direct impact on the kelp beds that serve as a nursery for a lot of species. But also the warmer water is producing algae blooms that produce toxins that affect the shellfish industry in that fashion. So we're seeing the effects on our timber, on our farming, and on our fishing, the pillars of our rural economy. And we gotta recognize that it's just going to get a lot worse. And we got to not only get America's house in order, we've got to lead the world in this effort. Because it doesn't work to take on this problem by yourself. You got to bring everybody along with you.
One of the things you mentioned yesterday in the press release about this legislation was you felt like by moving now that you could make sure American workers are the ones building the next generation of cars. Talk about that.
Yeah, you know, what frustrates me right now is you can get a tax credit to buy a foreign-made electric car, but the tax credits are disappearing for American-made electric cars. Why the hell would we subsidize foreign manufacturers rather than American manufacturers? Makes no sense at all. We should be working to lead the world in this effort and sell our cars to the world, not end up buying them from abroad. This is really troubling. I mean, I've watched while different trade treaties have proceeded to eviscerate the competitiveness of American manufacturing, because if you let a foreign company have full access to your customers, but that company gets to play by different rules, different environmental rules, different labor rules, different pay rules, they can undercut the price of the American factory, and either the American company goes out of business or it moves its factory overseas. Those core jobs making things are the foundation for the middle class. If we don't make things in America, we won't have a middle class in America.
Where does that put the gas and oil industry and the thousands that are employed there? Where does that put them going forward if you moved this direction?
So the beauty of rebuilding an energy economy is you create millions of good-paying jobs. Now, you think about when you renovate a house. You have all kinds of work generated for all kinds of crafts. Well, now multiply that times the entire energy economy of the country. You have to rebuild basically everything. And that means millions of good-paying jobs. One of the bills I put forward last year is called Good Jobs in the 21st Century. It creates a tax credit for creating construction jobs in the renewable energy economy that are equal in benefits to the jobs we currently have building pipelines. So we want to make sure that we not just create these jobs, but that they're good-paying jobs with good benefits.
U.S. Senator Jeff Merkley with us. Talk about some of the committees you're on right now and the role you have after gaining seniority over these past number of years.
Well, so I serve on four committees. The Budget Committee is one, and that works to lay out a vision at the beginning of each two-year cycle. And then again to do it a year later in the middle of the two-year cycle. That effort is kind of, you do go through an intensive process, and then that's kind of quiet after that. Second committee is appropriations. It's the appropriations committee that has enabled me to bring benefit to so many corners of Oregon, not through earmarks, but by developing programs that are national programs, but that are a good fit for Oregon. And so, for example, I've brought about $100 million to the piping of the Central Oregon Irrigation Operation worked with a partner in Mississippi, a Republican, to develop a program that was a good fit for that part of the state and so forth. Worked with Lindsey Graham on the project to address some of the coastal issues. Of course, Lindsey, South Carolina, he's a coastal senator as well. We're both in the same election cycle. Committee covers every topic, so you can really work on a huge number of things. Foreign relations goes back to my interest in the world not getting blown up by nuclear weapons and for America to be a light to the world on human rights. So I've led the effort for us to condemn genocide in Burma, to take on the Chinese enslavement of a million people, with the Uyghur population in China, and to highlight other abuses around the world. A lot of our soft power, America's soft power, has come from the respect with how we've undertaken human rights. Quite frankly, we've had a few hits to our soft power the last few years. It's something we're going to have to work to restore in the next few years.
What about COVID-19 and its impact on the federal budget deficit? Is more stimulus aid needed? And if so, how do we pay for it?
Yeah, so we've got to rebuild the economy from the families and small business up. Businesses is doing really well. And why are they doing really well? Because they expect to fill the gap left by all the small businesses that are wiped out. You can see that in the S&P 500. The index for the 500 biggest companies in America is going up. It's gone up, about 30% in the last 8 months, while the economy of America was collapsing. I want to see a world in which there's lots of small businesses, lots of local ownership, lots of local entrepreneurship, not where everything is run by just a few behemoths, by the Amazons and Googles and Microsofts of the world. That's really important in the bill that would help small business has been tied up by the Senate leadership for the last 5 months, very frustrating to me because our state and local government needs help to get through this. I mean, it's basically a difference on those who want to rebuild the economy from Wall Street down and those of us who believe we've got to rebuild it from the families and small business up. And that's what I'm fighting for. Is it going to take more money? It is. But think about this. In 2017, a Republican-led House and Senate did a $2 trillion tax cut with almost all the benefits going to the wealthiest Americans. If anyone out there thinks the wealthiest Americans, mega millionaires, many of them billionaires, need massive tax cuts, I just beg to disagree. I think families need help in America, not billionaires. And so we should reverse that 2017, get those $2 trillion and invest it in families.
All right, out of time for now. A candidate interview, U.S. Senator Jeff Merkley in Washington, D.C. Thanks for being on.
You're welcome. Great to be with you. Thank you so much.
1257 at News Radio 1240 KQEN.
You've been listening to Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN. A daily look at the people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. The show will be available as a podcast in just a few minutes at 541radio.com. So share it and let others who weren't listening live know about today's show. Inside Douglas County is a public affairs presentation of Brook Communications. Your home for Douglas County's news team. News Radio 1240 KQEN.